Hi, I'm Kristen.
And I'm her little brother, William.
We're from the podcast Guide to the Unknown, where we only talk about scary stuff and have a good time doing it.
Come join the scary fun, everyone.
Wherever you get your podcasts, you'll find Guide to the Unknown.
Warning, this podcast involves discussions of a spooky and graphic nature, not suitable for children or the faint of heart. Strong language and mature content is present. Listener discretion is advised. You have been warned.
When you wanna hear about the paranormal, you get the Spooked Girls. True crime that makes you hypothermal with the three Spooked Girls. Stabby snippets will give you dreams. Tara and Jessica will make you. Along with the Spooked Girls, bring on the slaughter. We on that haunted ground. Spooked Girls, the three Spooked Girls.
Hey, Spooksters, and welcome back to another episode here on Three Spooked Girls. My name is Tara, and as always, I am joined with my ghoul friend, Jessica.
Hi, friends.
Hello. And today we are bringing you another patron select. This episode was chosen and is dedicated to our patron, Hillary. Today, she has chosen the murder of Lauren Giddings. So that is what we are going to be discussing today. So Lauren was born on April 18th, 1984 in Tacoma Park, Maryland, to Karen and William, or Bill, Giddings. And she was the oldest of three children. Her two younger sisters' names are Caitlin and Sarah. Lauren was described as someone who was driven, academic, and confident. And everyone just, they loved being around her. She was a lot of fun. She was very close with her family. She would make sure to go home every holiday she could because she attended law school down in Georgia. And she would always call and check in with them regularly. And it was said by her sister, especially their grandmother, she would actually call her every Sunday. And I thought that was so cute.
I love when people are close to their grandmas.
Right? It's so cute. And they were all super proud of her because she was actually the first person in their family to graduate from college. And on top of that, graduate from law school. She attended Mercer University, Walter F. George School of Law down in Georgia. And she graduated from there in 2011. She was planning on becoming, or she aspired to be, like a defense lawyer. She wanted to go into criminal law, like defense stuff. So that's really cool. And then that's basically where our story is going to start. So in June of 2011, the month after graduation, she was studying to take the bar and it was fastly approaching. So she had told her friends and her family, like, hey, if you can't get a hold of me, I'll get back to you because basically I'm going to be studying 24/7 until I take the bar. And they're like, okay, cool. But before jumping into studying and all of that for, like, you know, days on end, she decided she wanted to have like one last night out with her friends. So on Friday, June 24th of 2011, she went out, and this included her friend Ashley, Ashley's boyfriend Paxton, and his roommate slash Lauren's ex named Alex, and some other friends of theirs too were there. They had all been out at the bar, and then after that, they took the party back to Paxton and Alex's apartment because they were roommates. The girls would end up staying the night there, and when Ashley woke up, she had asked Alex, like, hey, where did Lauren go? And he's like, oh, she left really early because she said she wanted to get home and she was going to start studying and whatever. And she's like, okay, cool. And so she's like, you know, not going to really bother her because she knew she'd be getting ready for the bar and all that shit. So this puts us on Saturday, the morning of the 25th. So flash forward a few days and Caitlin, her sister, hadn't heard from her. So she tried to text, call. I think she even said she emailed her, but no answer. And she was like, Ashley, and just kind of like, oh, okay, you know, not really too worried about it right then. She's like, it's fine. Well, then the 29th would come around. So 4 days since she had went out, Ashley tried calling her again and her phone was dead. And she's like, that's weird. Like, that's not like her at all. She always kept it charged up, things things like that. So Ashley would end up contacting Caitlin, her sister, and be like, hey, have you heard from Lauren? Her phone's dead when I tried to call. I just want to make sure like she's okay, you know, whatever. And Caitlin's like, no, but, you know, let me call her and let me see what's going on. And same thing, it went straight to voicemail. So she's like, okay, this is weird. So it set off red flags for Caitlin, of course, and Ashley. So she's like, go to her apartment. Here's where her hide a key is. Go make sure she's okay, kind of thing. And Ashley said she was a little apprehensive about this because it was, by the time they were going to go over there and stuff, it was like 11:15 at night. So she's like, either she's going to be really annoyed at me or sleeping or whatever, you know? She's like, I'll check, but okay, because she thought everything was fine. So Ashley and her boyfriend, they go over there and they find the hide a key and then they enter the apartment. And when they get inside, they realize that Lauren's phone is sitting there on the bed, just dead, and all of her stuff is there. Her laptop, her keys, her wallet, everything. Everything's there. They look around and they can't find her. So she calls Caitlin back and she's like telling her all of this, right? And Caitlin then turns around and calls her uncle because he's part of the Washington, D.C. police department. And she's like, look, this is what's going on. It's really weird. I'm really worried. And he's like, here's what you guys need to do. He's like, call Ashley back and tell her they need to not touch anything. They need to go back out of the apartment, shut the door, and they need to call 911. Something's going on. And so they do. The 911 call takes place at midnight, which of course will now push us into the 30th. So the 911 dispatcher, when they're talking with them, actually tells them to go back in because they say, hey, check her towels, see if they're damp. This will tell you like she's been here recently, like taking a shower type of thing.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And to also like look around, like maybe in her trash to see if you see any kind of like weird receipts or anything where maybe somewhere she's went. Towels weren't wet and they didn't really see anything at first that would have helped them. So they exit the apartment. And at this point, Alex joins them. And so they're going around and knocking on their neighbor's doors. And they obviously start with like the next door neighbor. His name is Stephen McDaniel. And when they're talking with him, he actually decides like, hey, let me come help you, because like he's lived next door to her for all 3 years because he's also a law student. This apartment complex is essentially student housing for them. It's like literally across the street from the campus.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So he like, you know, he knew who she was. Like they ran into each other quite a bit, you know, talked, whatever. And so the group of them go to start checking places. They're like, well, maybe she got tired of studying in the apartment and she went across the street to go to the library. So they check the library, nothing. And then they're like, okay, let's drive around and just go to the places she frequents and see if maybe we see her. Maybe she just needed a break. Something happened. She just was like, fuck it. And just, you know, dipped. But nothing. She was nowhere to be found. So actual morning rolls around. So, you know, we're still on the 30th, but it's like 7 or 8 o'clock. And Detective Scott Chapman comes into work and he says when he comes in, he's immediately handed Lauren's case file. So he loads up and he heads over to her apartment and he gets there at 9 a.m. He chats with Ashley and the others being like, hey, like, what's going on? Let's go look, that kind of thing. They're like, yeah. And the other weird thing is, you know, now that it's the 30th and we're thinking about it, this is the day she was actually supposed to be moving out of this apartment. And he's like, oh, really? Okay. So when they're walking around, nothing's packed. It's just all like still lived in. It's like, well, that's kind of weird because yes, you're studying for the bar, but it's like if you were planning on moving out this day, you'd be getting stuff together. Like nothing was in boxes, nothing. So Detective Chapman was like, that was an instant red flag for me, like right away. So they look through her trash and stuff and they see some stuff. They see a receipt and some containers from Zaxby's, which is a fast food restaurant. And the receipt said Saturday, June 25th, around like dinner time. So like 6-ish, I believe it was. So it was like that weekend, that day after she left the party hangout thing, but like not recent. That's still 5 days prior. Obviously, like police are chatting with people and looking through her apartment and all of that. And just 40 minutes after his arrival, so 9:40, right? They said it was a breezy day and that it picked up. And Detective Chapman and this other officer were standing outside and they said they smelled a really foul odor. They both kind of just looked at each other and were like, do you smell that? So they went around to the side of the apartment where the trash cans were, and they opened one up and they found the source of the odor. It was a black trash bag. And when they opened this up, they found a human torso with no head, no arms, no legs, and a pair of pink running shorts with it. They obviously are immediately getting the crime scene techs in to take the body so they can test it, because they're like, we have a missing girl and we have a body. So is this her? We need to see what's going on. After they find the torso, they search like the other trash cans that are right there and all the sewers and everything. But like, there's nothing. They don't find anything else. So like, oh, shit. Okay. And Lauren's family, they're, you know, they're up in Maryland, like I said, and they're all together, and her parents were actually getting ready to head down to Georgia to help with the search. One of their uncles comes in and says, hey, have you guys seen the news lately? And they're like, no, we haven't. Like, we're getting ready to go. And he's like, you need to look. So they look it up and they see a headline that there was a body or human remains found outside of Lauren's apartment. This was like a breaking story, so it didn't state the condition of her body, because obviously the authorities, they said they wanted to tell her family first before making that public information, so they didn't find out this way, you know, if it was even her, because at this point they didn't know if it was her or not. So Bill, Lauren's dad, he's like, fuck this, I'm leaving and going down there right now. So he starts driving down. He's like, I want to go look at this body, because if it's her, I want to be the one to ID her. So he drives down to Georgia. Meanwhile, because he'll get there later, they have like an informal-ish interview with like Ashley, Alex, and all the other people. And Ashley tells them about all them going out and whatnot. So they ask her about Lauren's relationship with Alex, since that's an ex and that's somebody they're going to look at.
Right.
And she said that actually after their breakup, you know, they remained friends. There was no bad blood or anything like that. And Lauren actually had had a boyfriend she had been on and off with for a few years. He's a lot older. It's that guy I mentioned earlier that she was planning to move with. His name is John Capleton, and he was 48 at the time, and he was said to be a very successful lawyer. He was actually located in Charleston, South Carolina. And when they talk about their relationship, they were like, things were okay, not the greatest. They started fighting more and more because it essentially seemed like he didn't want Lauren necessarily maybe to move in with him, type of thing. So police are like, okay, we'll note that and we'll talk to him in a little bit. So then they talk to Paxton, and it's essentially like he confirms pretty much everything that Ashley said. And so next is Alex. So they're kind of like, you know, probing him a bit because he is an ex and that's someone you got to look at. And he's like, we're good, you know, things are fine. He's like, but the night of the hangout thing, when they came back to our apartment after going out to the bar, we kind of hooked up. Like, we didn't have sex, but we were fooling around. And he's like, the reason we didn't have sex is because I know she has this boyfriend. So I was like, no, we can't, type of thing. But he's like, you know, I have no ill will against Lauren. Like, we're cool. He's like, she had actually texted me on the 25th at 1:30 p.m. to go swimming. But he's like, I didn't even get back to her because I was studying myself for the bar. And then he's like, then I had plans to watch a baseball game with some buddies later. And so they're like, okay. So they're like, you know, talking to him more. But the friends confirmed, they're like, yeah, we watched this baseball game and then we all went to bed and that's it. He was here the whole time. And so like, okay. And then after this, they talked to Steven because, you know, next door neighbor. He said that he knew her because of that. He'd lived by her for 3 years, and he actually had asked her out once, but she had declined because she had a boyfriend, and that she was, you know, extremely nice, all of that. And they're like, well, did you hear anything? You know, things like that. And he's like, no, I didn't hear anything weird in the middle of the night, but she does like to go jogging. Like, I see her head out regularly. So maybe something happened during that. I don't know. They're like, okay. So back to the apartments, and they're talking to the complex, like manager, owner, what have you at that point. And of course, like, she has a master key and whatnot. And it was funny because like in one of the things I was watching, it was like super dramatic. They were like, she has a master key. What does she have against Lauren? And da 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 da. And then like, I'm like, Jesus Christ, she fucking is the owner/manager. Of course she's going to have the key.
All apartment complexes have master keys.
Yeah, I was like, okay.
I'm so stupid. Our apartment complex has a key.
Right, exactly. But anyway, so they're like walking around talking to her and stuff. And then they kind of come by this like maintenance room door. And Detective Chapman's like in the reenactment's like, hey, what's that? Can I go in there? But obviously everyone fucking knows what a maintenance fucking door looks like. So it's like, go in there. Then in that thing, they're like, and then she opens this door. Obviously, she has nothing to hide. And I'm like, no shit, narrator. Of course she doesn't have anything to fucking hide. What the fuck? I was like, Jesus Christ. But anyway, so Detective Chapman's like, hey, do you mind if I go in here? And she's like, yeah, sure. Why not? So they go in, open the door because they have a dismembered torso. So obviously somewhere where there's tools and stuff, he's like, I would like to look.
Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. They open the door and what do they find? They end up finding a hacksaw in there that has stuff on it that's red and like dark brown that looks like blood. And there's also hair on it. So immediately he grabs his like crime scene people and he's like, bag that up. Take that in. We need to see what's on this. Because like the guy that actually processed it and took it and stuff, he's like, yeah, the minute I looked at it, I knew it was blood and some kind of tissue for sure. So there's that. And then so the detective's talking to the owner and like, okay, who else would have access to this room? Is there anybody else that has a master key? You know, that kind of thing. She's like, the only other person who would have a master key and that does, to my knowledge, is this guy named Peter Welsh. And he's a law student across the street, but he works maintenance for me. So he gets a break on rent. And so they go talk to Peter and Peter's like, oh, yeah, like the complex looks pretty small. So I feel like everybody pretty much at least knew who somebody looked like type of thing. Because he's like, yeah, I knew who Lauren is, but like we aren't friends or anything. And so then they don't really say exactly what he told them, but they ask him, like, what were you doing? Like, what's his alibi? And they said it was like super detailed and it was absolutely confirmed. So it was like very, very tight, like even tighter than Alex's. It wasn't Peter. Of course, they start circling back to their suspects. They're just like, what the fuck? And they're like, you know what? We're going to go do like an actual interview with Steven. Maybe we can jog his memory, something. So they have him come down. They have him waiting at the station for about 90 minutes. And his interview is at 11:50 a.m. They do like, you know, the run of the mill, like, let me get to know you and all that shit that they do. And, you know, they find out like that he was in law school, that he had asked Lauren out, but she declined, all of that stuff. And then they're like, oh, okay, well, do you have a girlfriend? And he's like, no, I don't actually. Really, I'm saving myself for marriage. So no relationship. And they're like, okay. Like, whatever. Then the cop says to them, we are going to be knocking on everybody's doors so we can look in everyone's apartment. Just take a look, you know, kind of like the Elisa Lam thing where they knocked on the hotel room doors and be like, can we look in? Yes, no, that kind of thing. But keep in mind, Steven doesn't know about the body and isn't told about it at this point. So they've kept that on lock. Like, they have no idea. Because, like, basically, the friends were kind of like all right there type of thing. So they weren't obviously watching the news or anything like that. So at first, though, when he's asked this, he's like, no, I have firearms in there and I'm just like really protective of my stuff. So I'm not down. And so there's like a bunch of back and forth. If you want to watch his interrogation, it's on YouTube or and the sources page too. Eventually, they go back and forth. You see him like very reluctantly be like, okay, fine, I guess. And before they leave, the detective is like, hey, I just have like just a quick question for you. And he's like, okay. And he's like, what happened to your nose? He's got like a red mark on his nose. And he's like, oh, I don't know. Like, it was just there. And the cop's like, okay, do you mind lifting up your shirt for me real quick? And he's like, yeah, I guess. And he's got scratches on him. So the cop's like, what happened there? What's that about? And he's like, oh, I must have scratched myself in my sleep or something. I don't know. I just woke up and it was like same thing with the nose. I just woke up and it was there. And the cop's like, all right. And then they leave.
Are we talking like nail scratch marks or are we talking like one big scratch?
Scratches from nails.
Okay.
So the guy's like, okay, but I will tell you, cops pocket this. You should pocket this. So they conduct the search at his apartment at 1:40 p.m. So they interviewed him like a long time. While they're doing their search, Steven talks with a reporter. And if you're familiar with this case, you've seen this. That's also on the sources page if you'd like to watch it. So he's very chatty. He's talking about like how they're looking for Lauren, how he hopes, you know, she's okay. And then talking about like how she did go jogging and maybe somebody snatched her is his exact words. And then the reporter says to him, well, what about the body the police found this morning? He just like goes total blank face. he's like, what? And she's like, yeah, they took a body. Or, and then she kind of like back, she's like, oh shit, they took something, you know, they bagged up something pretty big this morning from like a dumpster or whatever. And he's like, zombie. And then she's like, are you okay? Do you need to sit down? And he's like, yeah, I need to sit down. And then he's like hyperventilating and like crying and like all of this shit. And then it like cuts. And then the whoever put the video up, like it cut. And then it goes like to when he gets back up and he's talking. And what's interesting is it turns more from like, oh, yeah, like she's such a good friend, blah, 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 to like kind of withdrawn and more like, oh, I mean, I didn't know her that well type of thing. So it's really, really interesting. Meanwhile, the police are inside his apartment because, you know, he said, go ahead, go in. And they find some weird shit. So they find a lot of guns, like not surprising because he told them about them. But on top of that, they also find samurai swords, which I was like, what the fuck? A bunch of them. Because like not like bashing anyone who has, like people I know of that have them, they have like one, maybe two where it's like crossed. But like he had multiple, apparently. So there's that.
Like I get that like laddery thing. Where there's like a spot for like four of them.
Yeah.
And it's decoration. But like, I don't get the people. One, because I think like, oh, I want to have kids one day. So it's like, I can't have like a surplus of sharp swords around.
Yeah. But no, it gets weirder. Get ready. So he had a bunch of like stashed canned food, like a lot of it. And not even just that. He had written all the dates on there, the date he purchased it, and then the date it expired. Like labeled on all of this food. And then he also had a fuck ton of empty Powerade bottles and a bunch of empty toilet paper rolls, like the cardboard part, all stashed, like a fuck ton.
Doing a bunch of 5-minute crafts?
Right? Oh, God. But no, the guy was like, it was like a prepping situation. Like he had like jugs of water and stuff like that. So it's like really weird.
But just the toilet paper.
What are you going to do with those?
Well, I guess the toilet paper rolls you could use to start fires. Some people use them like kindling to start fires and stuff.
Oh, that's true. I didn't think about that. Look at you.
Well, I camp. Like, that's what my father-in-law does.
That makes sense. So they find all of that, right? And along with this, they find some condoms. And they're like, this dude said he was like a virgin saving himself for marriage and he doesn't have a girlfriend. They're like, that's weird. So they ask him, they're like, hey, what's up with this kind of thing, you know? And what he tells them is, he's like, oh, well, let me tell you. So what happened was I break into people's apartments and I take things. So I took those from somebody. And they're like, what?
So he's admitting to a crime?
Yes. So with him doing that, they also find a master key in his apartment. I'm sure you can guess what's going to happen to him right now.
That would make sense how he's breaking into houses.
Yes. So he's arrested for burglary charges at this point because they're like, oh, okay, weird. So during this time, they took 6 knives, one that was a foot long. They took the swords, tennis shoes, t-shirts, underwear, which are women's underwear, a gray bath towel, and 13 pieces of cutting equipment. So then on the 1st, so now we're in July, he goes to court for his burglary charges and he's charged with 2 counts of burglary and he is not given any bail. Meanwhile, we got another search going on, right? Here's what they take this time. 2 handguns, a rifle, rope, wooden sticks, 4 baseball bats, a bayonet, a chain mail vest, a wad of hair, laptop, camera, cell phone, a hard drive, a shoelace, some receipts, a sponge, 2 keys, which one's the master key, and a silver case with a journal and the laptop. And while they're doing this, there's cadaver dogs brought in. They alert multiple places on the property. So the 1st is the communal laundry room, and they find a bloody sheet. And the apartment below Lauren's, not his, it's a different one, there's alerts there, and it's in the bathroom and the living room wall. So I'm thinking, like, pipes, right?
Right.
They also see small smears of blood, so they're like, what the fuck? That's weird. And then there's also hits in Lauren's bathroom and Stephen's bathroom and bedroom. They also, during the search, go into his car, and they find bloodstains that they take samples of. Obviously, this isn't enough for murder charges yet, but He's already in jail for his burglary stuff, so that helps. And Lauren's dad, to kind of like bring him back in for you guys, he gets there like pretty late. Like, I think it's like 11 or 12 hour drive. So he's like, it's like 11 at night or something. And obviously he's like pushing. He's like, I want to see this body. I want to see if it's Lauren. Like, let me see it. And the police chief, he's like, I'm a dad. I wanted to talk to him, dad to dad. So he's like, I had everybody else leave the room. And he's like, I told him what the situation was because I didn't want him to see that if he didn't have to type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, obviously, we don't know 100% if it's her, but since it's in her complex, it's not looking good. His name was Mike Burns. And, you know, so Mike talks to him about that. And then he gets a DNA sample from Bill so they can see if it be, you know, to help them determine if it's Lauren.
Which is smart.
Yeah. And then Bill, he doesn't stick around. He goes home to be with his family.
I would, too.
Yeah. So those tests do confirm that, yes, the torso is Lauren. With her autopsy and whatnot, they could not find a cause of death, but they were able to tell she had not been sexually assaulted.
That's good.
Yeah. So, you know, there's that. During all of this, Lauren's boyfriend obviously finds out, like, what the fuck's going on and whatnot. So he comes and talks to the police, talking about their relationship and all of this. And he's like, yeah, she would come down most weekends to see me. I had seen her the weekend before the night she went out with her friends, but we hadn't really talked much over the weekend or really this last week because, you know, like the whole bar thing. But he's like, that's not really weird. And he's like, I actually went on a golf trip to California. So like I was doing my own thing. And they're like, oh, okay. You weren't even like over here anywhere. Can you prove that? And he's like, oh yeah, of course. He's like, I have everything like on my computer. Cause keep in mind, this is 2011. So it's like not quite as accessible. So it's like valid. So he's like, when I get home, I'll send you like everything, all the receipts. So you know I was there. And they're like, okay, cool. But he's like, I did get one email from her, and they already knew this at this point, just didn't mention it earlier. He's like, I did get this email from her on the 25th at like 10:40. I noticed like afterwards, but I haven't heard from her, that said she thought somebody had broken into her apartment and was like poking around. And so like, I have this little excerpt of it, and she says, I can't wait to get out of this town. Macon hoodlums tried to break into my apartment Thursday night. It was terrifying. I haven't been able to sleep since. I need a gun. My only defense was 911 on my cell phone. So scary. That's directly what she said, but it was kind of like, yeah, that's fucking scary. And like, I didn't like it, but she wasn't like super terrified where she wasn't going to stay in her apartment. And what's interesting is they let like 2 weeks go by and they hadn't got this email from the boyfriend. I'm like, why the fuck are you waiting 2 weeks? I'd be like 2 days and be like, where the fuck's my shit? So they call him and they're like, what the fuck, dude? And he's like, I swear I sent it. He's like, I emailed it when I got home, like I said I would. And he went and looked and he's like, oh, the file was too large. I'm so sorry. Let me redo this right now. So he does. He sent them like receipts for fucking everything, like the hotel, food, anything he was like had a paper trail for. He was legit trying to give to them and he did. And so like he's in the clear. He was legit in California. But I just wanted to kind of like wrap that up so people aren't like, what is happening? So to kind of backtrack a little bit, on the 6th, that's when the police hold the news conference and confirm that the torso is Lauren's publicly. But they hadn't been able to find the other body parts at this time. And they go back in and they do another search and they take some more items from Steven's apartment and from Lauren's and stuff. They end up like taking her bathtub and stuff so they can test it. Because like when they went back in there and they like luminoled it, you can probably guess what happened. It, detective's words, lit up completely, like lit up everywhere. So they're like, holy shit, they did this in her fucking bathtub. They dismembered her in her bathtub. And they take some more stuff from Stephen's apartment, like I said. And then also in early July, so I just want to mention as well, on July 9th, they do have a memorial service for Lauren at this point. Since the news was public, they did it about like 3 days after. As we move into later in the month, so around the 21st, you know, like forensics and stuff is going through all that stuff they took. So like the laptop, the USB stick thing and all of that. Also, they start talking to Steven's friends because they're like, really, like, what kind of person are we dealing with? Like, this is looking not great. Most of them honestly said he seemed like he was a harmless nerd. Honestly, when they were talking about it, I very much got like Sheldon vibes because they were like, he is super smart and he's not afraid to let people know it. It's harmless and he's a little quirky, but like it's obviously off-putting to, you know, the ladies type of thing. So I was like, oh, Sheldon. Okay, weird. But anyways, they also mentioned that he was like super obsessed with zombies, which like nothing wrong with that, whatever. But he also really, really, really liked talking about murder. And no, before anyone's like, huh, that's ironic, Tara. No, not in the sense like we're talking about it here, but in the fact that like he would literally go on about how somebody would get away with the perfect murder.
Oh, it's that guy.
Mm-hmm. And what would they do to not get caught? And he had a common theme with these conversations. He said that he would chop up the body into pieces and dispose of it in multiple locations.
A lot of people do that and they get caught. Like, you're not special.
No. So, I mentioned they have the computer and the hard drive, so they look into it. And he has hundreds of photos of Lauren that he had stolen this hard drive. This was hers, apparently. And then, creepier, on his camera, they found deleted videos of him having put his camera on a stick. And he was lifting it up to look into Lauren's apartment window the night she died.
That's really creepy.
Yeah. And it's out there and you can watch it. It's nothing bad. She's not even in the room. But it's like, it is so creepy to know that this is real. And then like watching it like, ugh, I fucking cannot. They also, when they looked at like his search history and stuff, he had looked at her like social media and searched her like I didn't write the number down, but it was like literally thousands of times. I'm gonna be so mad because I know it's in like the margin of one of my notebooks, but I type up my notes because my handwriting's terrible. Anyway, sorry, guys. Anyway, so there's that. And then at the same time, also looking at very violent porn, apparently, and had child pornography on his computer.
Well, fuck, dude.
Yeah. Oh, and guess what? Guess what else they found when they were searching?
What?
Remember the underwear?
It's hers.
Yeah. And there's something else, too. Remember the hacksaw? It was her DNA. And you know the cardboard packaging that you have to take off when you buy that shit from, like, Lowe's or whatever? The packaging for that hacksaw was in his apartment.
What the fuck?
I don't know. He's a fucking... Obviously, he's not as smart a killer as he thought he was. So, fuck you, Steven. So... now that they have all of this, obviously, y'all can guess what's going on now. He is now given charges with first-degree murder for the death of Lauren. And then later that month, on August 23rd, he is charged with 7 counts of possession for the child pornography.
That's insane.
I know. It's disgusting and terrible. So during all of this, he is like swearing up and fucking down that he is innocent, he had nothing to do with it, he would never hurt her, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, just take a minute and think about this, guys. Please go watch that fucking interview. He was on that camera pretending like he thought she was still alive. He was with her fucking friends, quote, looking for her, even though he already knew she was fucking dead. And then gets on camera. And it's not the shock that he's finding out Lauren's dead. It's the shock that he found out, oh, fuck, I'm about to be caught. Like, you gotta be a special kind of fucked up. Just saying. But he's swearing up and down, up and down. I didn't do this. I didn't hurt her. I didn't touch her. Like, he's got this stupid, weird kind of higher pitch voice. I'm like, ew, stop. Anyway, and the cop's like, you fucking hurt her. You did it. And he's got, like, I'm assuming a picture of her. And he's, like, you know, tapping it, like, and it's just like, oh, God. But he won't budge, won't nothing. So, you know, he goes back. He's, like, with court and stuff. And the judge sets his bond for, like, $850,000. Family can't afford it. So his ass gonna fucking sit there. And after this, one of the things is the death penalty was on the table for him with this. So since he keeps swearing he's innocent and not guilty, prosecution's like, look, let's cut the fucking bullshit. If you tell us exactly what happened, we'll take the death penalty off the table.
It's a good move.
Mm-hmm. Because they're like, you know what? We don't give a flying fuck about you, but Lauren's family, they deserve some fucking answers on what happened to their daughter. Because like I said, they never found the rest of her. So he does take it and he writes a 700-word confession.
That isn't that much. I thought you were going to be like a 700-page. I was like, novel.
No, 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 no. So I have the actual confession that he wrote and he read this in court in front of her family and everybody. I'm going to read it to you guys because this is his own words on what happened. On Sunday, June 26, 2011, around 4:30 a.m., I entered Lauren Gittings' apartment with a master key I possessed. I was wearing gloves and a mask. I walked into her bedroom door, stood there, observing her sleeping. As I took another step, the floor creaked and she awoke. She sat up in bed, saw me, and said very calmly, "Get the fuck out." I leapt across the bed and onto her and grabbed her by the throat. We tumbled out of bed and onto the floor in her struggle to get away. She moved her legs and lower body under her bed, preventing her from getting away or kicking me. I kept my hands around her throat as we fell onto the floor. She reached up and was able to grab my mask and pull it off my head. She said, "Steven, please stop." I continued to strangle her until she stopped moving. I remained that way, my hands around her throat, for several minutes, possibly as long as 15 minutes. She did not move anymore. I dragged her into the bathroom and placed her in the bathtub, then returned to my apartment. I remained at my apartment, mostly on my computer, through the day Sunday, June 26th. I returned to Lauren's apartment around midnight Sunday to begin to dismember her with the hacksaw that was later recovered from the laundry room maintenance closet. I removed her limbs and head, wrapped them in several black trash bags separately, and discarded them in the Mercer's Law School dumpster across the street from Barrister Hall's apartments, which is their apartment complex. I cut up the mask, gloves, and my shirt and flushed them down my toilet. I wrapped her torso in black plastic trash bags and placed it in the green Barrister Hall's trash can on Tuesday, June 28th, before daylight. I then cleaned up her bathroom. I never used the refrigerator in apartment one. At no time before Lauren's death did I sexually accost her. At no point after her death did I perform any sexual act of any kind with respect to her remains. Respect to her remains? You fucking dismembered her. Like, you're an idiot. Okay. She was wearing the pink running shorts when she died, and I never removed them. They were found on her torso just as I had left them. On Monday, I stayed home from bar prep class. Over the next several days, I rarely slept. I used my computer extensively, yet still attended bar prep class on Tuesday and Wednesday. I joined the search party Wednesday night into the early hours of Thursday morning, June 30th, still in a dreamlike delusional state in which I believed at the time, while taking part in the search, that Lauren was still alive and that I had not done what I had done. Even searching the empty law school in the delusional hope of finding Lauren alive and well, as if I had not already killed her. During the weeks leading to my actions and the days following, as I look back onto it now, I can only describe myself as divided in mind, unable to account for how I had committed these horrible acts, and at the same time, also be able to carry on daily routines. It is difficult for me to explain why I killed Lauren and attempt to conceal my deed the way I did. The difficulty in explaining it lies in my own inability to understand it myself. I know that I was very wrong. I am not delusional or without all morals or decency. Yet, I acknowledge that something in my makeup, my psychology, my neuropathy, my own particular pathology, perhaps, must explain it. But it is beyond my reach. Lauren was my friend. Not a day goes by that I do not grieve over her death. I am extremely sorry for what I did to Lauren and her family. I do not expect forgiveness of Lauren's family, and there is no way I can ever deserve it. No words are sufficient to take away their pain. If I could take back what happened, I would do so. If I could restore Lauren back to her family, I would. All I can say to Lauren's family and her many friends is, I'm very sorry. And that's his confession.
It's pretty straightforward.
Yep. And just some couple tidbits with this. So he had obviously placed all of that because he knew the trash would get picked up. It was literally just like a stroke of luck that they even were able to find her torso because that was trash day. Basically, it was like the trash truck was running late. And then once the cops were there, they were inadvertently blocking it. So the trash truck's like, okay, I'm not going to fuck with this shit. Bye. So literally, it's like complete happenstance, like luck that they were able to find her or that she hadn't been taken because the rest of her remains were, and even to this day, they never found them, which is just terrible, you know? So on April 21st, 2014, Steven was sentenced to life in prison and is currently at the Valdosta State Prison. But you guys know, when there's these rough cases, we like to kind of end on a positive note. I'm assuming they didn't do it this year because of, or, you know, 2020 because of COVID. But they actually do have like a fundraising 5K that they do. It's called Lauren Gittings 5K. And the event's organized by the Association of Women Law Students, or AWLS, there at the law school. And then the money is raised to go towards a scholarship that's in her honor, the Lauren Gittings Scholarship. And this is given to a third-year law student and also someone who's a member of AWLS to help them pay for their expenses for the bar exam. So I thought that was really cool. And I think when we have these horrific things, when there's something good that comes out of it like this, I think that's a great way to honor it, because obviously that's where she attended law school and graduated from. And she was a runner. So it was like two things she was known for and passionate about. So I think that's great. Steven can go fuck himself and rot in prison.
For sure.
Yes. So that is the murder case of Lauren Giddings. Again, Hillary, thank you for being a patron and supporting our show. It truly means the world to us. And thank you for bringing our attention to this case, because I had heard about it, but I didn't know the super, super details of it. If you would like your own episode dedicated to you, like Hillary had today, you can join us over in the Spookster Club starting at our $10 tier. This is one of the many perks we have for you guys, and that can be found either in the link tree in the show notes, or you can go to patreon.com/3spookedgirls. But with that, we are going to wrap up, and we will see you on Monday. Bye, guys.
Bye.